Welcome back, WNST.net and AM 1570, and of course, our Baltimore positive journey continues. A unique segment here is that Don Mohler and I are via satellite today, and when news happens, Don, I know we like to jump on it, and we've had Malia Cromer on in the past from over at Goucher in the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center, but in the middle of this political season with us going to the polls in a few weeks, we have the mayoral candidates, I know you want to take a deep dive into polling with Malia, as well as just what this is telling us about what Marylanders think about things, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to our sponsors, State Fair, Fadley, Center Maryland, and Jeff Mohler and Mohler & Gary Realtors. And we'll jump right into it. First of all, Malia, thanks for joining us again, and welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be on.
Well, this particular poll, before we jump into the specifics, you know, that we always like to help Nestor become more of a believer in polls. And I looked at this poll, and I looked at the sample, and I'm struck by, I think, the margin of error, 3.7%. Correct, Malia, in this one?
That's correct. That's for our statewide sample, yes.
That seems fairly small. So, again, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with polling, walk us through what's involved in getting a sample that can yield such a small margin of error?
Sure. So the margin of error is associated with sample size, not population size. And we usually try to shoot for anywhere between like 600 and 800 completed interviews, and that gets you in the sort of ballpark of having a margin of error of anywhere between like 3.5 to 4.5%. And everybody should just think about margin of error as a bound around the numbers. So like how, like at a high point or a low point. So when you think about a horse race poll or when you interpret any poll results, always think about those numbers, not just as the numbers themselves, but as how high they possibly could be. So like, let's say a margin of error is 3% and your poll number is 51%. So it could be as high as 51, 52, 53, 54, or as low as 3 points below that. And that's just the thing to keep in mind. When those numbers start to cross over each other in the margin of error, you aren't able to statistically distinguish then who is up or who is down. And that's important, especially as we start to talk about the horse race.
Yeah, and I mean, there's so much data and there's so much to unpack. And again, we're talking with Dr. Malia Cromer, the associate professor at Goucher, director of the Sarah T. Hughes Geopolitics Center, rapidly becoming one of the most respected, really, polling opportunities in the nation. Malia, let's just jump right in to, and I've looked at the numbers, and I've looked at the numbers over and over. I guess I shouldn't be surprised after all these years, but I continue to be surprised by the disconnect about what folks say in general about education, support for teachers, support for schools, and then how that translates to support for revenue. Talk to us a little bit about that because it jumps off the report to me.
Now, Dan, I'm actually surprised to hear you say that because you are a county executive, and I think you're well aware of the intimate relationship between city services people want or the county services people want and the amount of taxes they're willing to pay.
And that's why I said I shouldn't be surprised that after all these years, because the reason I say that, Malia, and I appreciate you saying that, is these numbers were staggering, and that's what looked at them earlier.
Well, the one number that jumps out is 85% agree that salaries of public school teachers are too low. 85% of us think teachers are underpaid. How many of us want to raise our hands and help those teachers get paid more, right? Like that's a statement versus a political outcome that, I don't know where we bridge that, right, from a leadership standpoint.
Sure, and so what we've done on our poll, and we've done different iterations of these questions on several different polls. And so what I can tell you, Don, is really to echo what you said, is there is a priority for public education in this state. Nearly every poll that we've taken, public education always is one of those top issues that people identify. On previous polls, we found that around 70% of Marylanders think that we need to give additional funding to public schools. And now on this poll, we asked about some of those specifics about Kerwin, the big issues of Kerwin. We see widespread, sort of even bipartisan agreement over things like vocational training or job training programs. 93% of people agree that we need more of those. 85% want more teacher salary. They think teacher salaries are too low, and they think public school buildings and facilities are run down. But all these things cost money. And we asked back in September whether they would be willing to people be willing to increase their taxes to see an improvement in these things, see an improvement in public education. And people were willing then, when you couch taxes in the terms of an improvement to a government service, particularly education. But when you start to ask people about taxes and you take it out of the context of a particular government service like education, they're going to tell you that their taxes are too high and that they'd like to keep government services where, like, the level they are at now. And even some individuals say they'd like to reduce government services. About 28% of people said they'd like to reduce government services in order to reduce taxes. And so it's that mixed bag. It's the conflict. And I'll always make the argument that it's up to the legislators and the advocates to make the value proposition to the constituents on what they're on what they're actually getting for their tax investment, or to find alternative revenue streams. And so individuals, especially those individuals in the middle class and working class Marylanders, don't feel the brunt of any sort of tax increases. And that's what they're doing right now, too. They're looking for additional revenue streams.
This is a pretty consistent, and you indicate it, and it's, I appreciate you pointing it out, laying it out like that, because this, is it not, a pretty consistent push and pull where people want the services, but they have just they have a negative reaction to additional revenue, additional tax.
Well, Johnny O's finding that out, right, Don? I mean, you had that job. You use these polls by people like Dr. Cromer to sort of read the tea leaves to know how to govern, right? But part of that is to say this is what people want, and then how do we do it, right?
Yes, absolutely, and I think as Malia said, and I think actually County Executive Vyshevsky is a good example. Nestor, it's a good field test. And Malia, weigh in on this if you agree with me. But last year, when he was faced with an $80 million deficit, he went out, and if you remember, we talked at the time, and he's doing his second round now. But last year, he went out and did seven town halls about the budget in each councilmatic district. I think I said at the time, I kidded him, I said, well, it'll be like those in the past. You'll get 20 or 30 people. You won't get a lot done, but, you know, a handful of people will come. Well, at the ones that he did, because his team worked so hard to engage people, there were hundreds that came and packed auditoriums at each one, some with overflow crowds. So, Malia, I think, is that an example what you're talking about, that if you believe in these things, and you believe you have to do these things, then the legislators have to do the hard work about getting the public on board?
But I think that's true, and I think it's true for any issue. And I will say that the advocates for Kerwin have absolutely tried to get out there and push their message. And it is reflected in our numbers, right? So while people aren't really excited about paying any additional taxes, that's almost to be expected. The fact that there's such widespread agreement among some of these indicators on the Kerwin Commission, it's clear that the advocates have done their job. I think because not everybody, keep in mind, not everybody has a child in public schools, so not everybody is, you know, intimately aware of what's going on. And so to have these sorts of numbers, you know, 93% saying that we need more job or vocational education programs, 85% saying teacher salaries are too low, 76% saying school buildings are run down, and 70% basically saying that public schools don't receive enough funding. There is an education component here going on. This is a message that has resonated, but the problem is when it comes down to paying for it, that's where the conflict lies, and you can see that conflict being played out right now in the session of the General Assembly.
Dr. Malia Cromer joining us here from Goucher, and of course, she does polls. Don Moeller, of course, here as well. We're on Baltimore Positive, doing a rare sort of remote impromptu version of this because this poll's fresh. This is great information. Malia, how will candidates use this? And I know you were sort of all over the place in a lot of the things you did in regard to Kerwin, in regard to Larry Hogan. Quite frankly, I'm in the sports business, sports betting, and the legalization of sports betting. There were a lot of different things that you sort of polled for. What are some things that stood out for you in the research you've done lately?
Well, I think the sports betting question is certainly interesting. It's something we have not asked about before, although back in 2012, we asked some questions about gambling when we first sort of legalized gambling in the state, and particularly because the sports betting issue will, I think, eventually end up on the ballot for the public to decide. So there's two proposals that are going on right now, and to the general look at them is that one has a component with online sports betting, and then the other one has does not have it. It's just at locations like casinos or racetracks or stadiums. And what our results show right now is that the public is really divided on whether to legalize sports betting here in the state. Now, that is standalone. That's just asking, basically, if you support or oppose the legalization of sports betting, either online and then or in the locations. We have not added the part of the question yet, and we might not get a chance to, if whether you would support or oppose it if the revenue went towards funding public education. And we also haven't seen a large advocacy campaign for those individuals who are pro-sport legalization of sports betting happen here in the state. Unlike in 2012, we had obviously those commercials that I can remember when I first moved here. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is never ending with these commercials that are on television with legalizing the casinos. And so we haven't seen that yet. And I think when we do, we're likely to see those numbers move, and I wouldn't be surprised if more people became more supportive of sports betting.
I had to laugh because we all have a mutual friend in Damien O'Doherty in KO Public Affairs, and he probably chuckled when you talked about those commercials for the gambling, against the gambling, all those big issues that were taking place during the O'Malley administration. Putting on the political hat again, Malia, I'm always struck by what I call, even though we've had policy differences, what I call really the political acumen of Larry Hogan. Because when I look at your poll, even though he's had a little bit of a drop since your last poll, Larry Hogan remains overwhelmingly popular in this state, while Donald Trump's numbers are absolutely in the toilet. Is that an accurate representation?
That's accurate. And as a matter of fact, I think the only way you can compare their two numbers is to say they've both been really stable, except for one has been stable and high and one has been stable and low.
So does that, Malia, I know you're a pollster and you put your heart and soul into that, but you're also a political scientist. When you look at that and the difference between the Trump numbers and the Hogan numbers. Hogan, your latest poll was, I think, at 62%, and Trump at 29% approval.
It's close, yeah. So Trump, I think, it was like 31. It was right in ballpark. Let's say 30. 30 okay, and like 60. Yeah, 30 and low 60s for Hogan.
Low 60s for Hogan, 30 for Trump. As a political scientist, when you're talking with your students there at Goucher, does that tell you that voters are smarter and more discerning than we think, in that they do think beyond party lines and they do look at issues, or does it tell you something else as a political scientist?
Well, I'll say this, that party identification is the ultimate information shortcut, and it's one that every voter uses at the ballot box. But Larry Hogan has been able, I think, to transcend that party label, and he has consistently distanced himself from the president. And in that, in the distancing from the president, he has endeared himself to Democrats in the electorate. And that's the difference between their approval ratings. It's all felt on the Democratic side. So Hogan maintains right now he's still above 50% among Maryland Democrats, whereas Donald Trump is in the single digits, I believe, or very close to it.
Single digits. Wow. Okay. That's
particularly true, especially if you slice and dice it among African Americans, who make up a significant portion of our electorate here in the state. They have a single digit approval rating for Donald Trump. He just hasn't been able to build a coalition, nor has he been, I think, particularly interested in building a coalition. Hogan has to govern by coalition. He has to be able to piece together different parts of the electorate. And so that political necessity and his ability to do so is the reason that he can maintain a 62%, whereas Trump, just the way that Democrats feel about him, that's the number one. I think even when we sort of look around those Maryland Democratic likely voters, a plurality of those voters say that they are looking for somebody who can beat Donald, who is electable, who can beat Donald Trump. That's their number. That's their big issue, not policy going into the election.
You did ask that question. That's been front and center on primary and caucus goers so far, and that is, Do you want somebody necessarily who reflects all your values, or do you want somebody that can beat Trump? What's your primary thing? And in the state of Maryland, you found out for Democratic voters, it's I need somebody that can beat Donald Trump.
And Bernie Sanders is incredibly popular in Maryland, right, Malia?
Yes, incredibly. He's popular, but so are all the other Democratic candidates, save the, I think, Steyer and Gabbard, who just are really not known at all in the state. So it's not that Bernie Sanders, I think, ranked the highest in terms of popularity, but he's not really far behind in terms of Warren or Biden. They're all well, you know, well above water in terms of their popularity. They're really well liked among the Democratic electorate.
And is it almost fair to say it doesn't matter who the Democratic nominee is in this state, that's going to be on the blue scorecard in November, no matter who the nominee is here?
Our results suggest with just the massive amount of the gap between Donald Trump and every single one of the Democratic candidates that it won't matter here. We're not a swing state. We're a blue state. And
a blue state with a red governor, right? I mean, that's unique. That's very unique.
Well,
go ahead.
People think. Point that out. Go ahead.
It's not as unique as people think. You can see it in other blue states. But that's the difference, I think, a lot of the times with the state-level government, like a governor versus a senator, obviously, or the election for president. And so that's where you can see that disconnect. And Hogan, of course, ran and won as a moderate and as an independent-minded Republican. He uses those words and phrases a lot during the campaign. And so the distance from the National Republican Party certainly helped him. And the ability to separate himself from the National Republican Party during the 2018 election cycle helped him. But no, so I don't expect for any stretch of the imagination that whoever the Democratic candidate is, unless something catastrophic can happen, crazy happens, they will likely beat Donald Trump here in Maryland. That's a pretty safe bet to take.
Well, that's the best part of our conversation thus far, right, Tom?
Now, Malia, you are not directly involved at this point that I'm aware of in polling for the mayor's race. You are a city resident, a proud city resident. You certainly have looked at recent polls. And as we go to air with this particular piece, recent poll came out, and it had a plus or minus, I think it was in that 6-point range, and it showed, five or six candidates all bunched within 5 or 6 points. As you look at that poll and as you're on the ground in the city, I'm going to ask you to play pundit here for a minute. Is that race still really wide open? If I'm one of the campaigns and I call you and I say, all right, Malia, make sense of this for me, what would you be telling me?
Well, first and foremost, with that polling, I mean, any time that you have candidates that fall within the margin of error of each other, you can't distinguish a front runner. And so just by going off of the very limited public polling that we've had thus far and some of the internal polls that have been leaked, it really strikes me as it's a race between, you have 5 or 6 candidates that are falling pretty closely within the margin of error of each other, and with a significant portion undecided. And so when you're having the front runner only capturing 20% of the vote, there's a lot of room for the race to dramatically change. And I'll say this, for these polls that are being commissioned by Fox 45, one of the things that I would really encourage them to do is they should be releasing a full methodology statement with each one of their polls. And so while I'm really glad that somebody's sponsoring polls, I think it's incumbent upon them, and this is not a knock on Patrick Gonzalez, by the way, who's their pollster. I'm sure Patrick is giving them a full methodology statement as part of their work, as part of the work that he's doing for them. I'd love to see them link to that methodology statement. That's what I would love to see them do.
Well, when you do that, that's interesting, Malia. I hadn't thought about it in that way. And again, you say no knock on Patrick Gonzalez.
No, not at all.
But when I commission a poll like that, this is something that Nestor brings up to me all of the time. When I commission a poll like that, do I have input into the sample size or not? Or is that out of my hands once I commission
the sample size? No, you would purchase a sample size. So if I was working for you if I was your private pollster and you were a candidate, you would say to me, you would specify the sample size that you would like me to collect, and that's, you would pay for it. Now, sample size is expensive. It's a lot more expensive to get a lot larger sample size, right? So you're starting to add on thousands and thousands of dollars. But that's essentially what you would buy in terms of your bill of goods. The same, you would pick a sample size.
Right. Okay. So as you move around the Senate, and we certainly aren't going to ask you to name any candidates, put you on that spot, but as you move around the city, I mean, you know city residents, you live in a city neighborhood. I think we know some of the major issues, but I'm going to ask you, what do you hear city residents talk about that they're looking for in the next mayor? Not talking about a candidate. What are the folks that you talk to in the city, what are they looking for?
Well, I would say this, Federal Hill is unrepresentative of the city. That's where I live.
Right.
So we are not a representative sample of the city.
That's both of us, by the way.
Yeah. So I would say that, right. So any of us who live, I think, in what we like the white L, right? I don't think we live in representative, like the more affluent, they're just not representative of the city as a whole, nor of the city, reflective of the city's larger problems. And so you're obviously going to hear a lot of people talk about crime. As a matter of fact, on our latest statewide poll, crime bumped up to the number one issue facing the state. And that's primarily driven by individuals who live in the Baltimore metropolitan area saying crime. People from Prince George's and Montgomery County or outside the urban corridor want the people saying crime. It was the folks who live in the Baltimore metropolitan region. So crime is certainly a number one issue. You can see all the candidates talk about. They all have a crime reduction.
I'm interrupting you, and I apologize.
That's okay.
Had you seen that in the past? That jumped at me in your poll, because I was trying to think of the many polls that I've seen from candidates over the past 15 or 20 years. We often talked about crime, but I don't remember it bubbling up to be one of the key issues when you asked voters. This time it did. Did that strike you as unusual?
Yes. It was the first time we've measured it this high.
Yeah.
And so it's typically education, and it's typically economic issues always bump to number one or number two, depending on what's like the most talked about issue, you know, of that week or two. But this is the first time crime bumped up, and when I broke that down by region, it's the Baltimore kind of metropolitan region that's driving it.
Sure, and it makes sense.
Dr. Malia Cromer is here, and, you know, I can read from the bottom of this and talk about all the awesome stuff that they do there. So I'm going to do that just to read the fine print here. The Goucher College poll is conducted under the auspices of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College. The center is directed by Dr. Malia Cromer, who is our guest. She's an associate professor of political science at Goucher. So lots of poll information came out earlier in the week. We wanted to jump on this. Malia, anything else you're working on now that will come out before in regard to the election itself? I'm sure you're hard at work, and I never know exactly when these things are coming out or on a timeline. It's not like a football schedule, Malia.
No, actually, it's pretty on a pretty good schedule. If you go back and look at all of our previous polls, you will see that we come.
I don't know, though. I don't have a place to get the schedule. It doesn't come. When's the next one?
Here's a place to get the schedule. It's www.goucher.edu/poll. And you will, if you go back and look at all of our poll archives, you will see that the Goucher poll is conducted biannually. And we do it in September and in February.
So we're done for this election until the general will have a big one in September then.
I will say that we are done unless, here's my one caveat, if the primary election comes to Maryland in earnest. So if we get it through, we get through Super Tuesday and it's clear that no one's getting out and there's a bunch of different front runners and we make it clear to and come April 28th, like Maryland is in it. Then we'll do it. Then we'll probably, even though I'm not going to get paid more or anything else, but I'm going to do it anyway because I can't help myself, but we'll figure it. We'll find a way to pay for it.
See, I'm glad I asked then, right? So maybe there will be another poll off.
So I'm saying there's a chance, Nestor.
There we go. One of my favorite. Well, listen, Malia, thank you as always for taking the time. You're a busy lady taking the time to sit down, chat with us about this. Well, please thank your students. I know you think they do fantastic work, and let them know how much we appreciate it.
I will. Thank you so much for both of you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
The good doctor, Malia Cromer from Goucher, doing the poll thing over there. Make sure you're checking them out. And I'm up on the website at goucher.edu and the Hughes Center and all of their great work. You can find all of our great work at Baltimore Positive, including Ted Venatulis. We have Sheila Dixon joining us next week from Fade Lee's, as well as Frank Kelly from Kelly & Associates joining us as well. We will have Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman coming up in a few weeks, as well as Harford County Executive Barry Glassman. So lots and lots of great guests. Hope you're enjoying that. We are into the election season in earnest. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Baltimore Positive. We never stop telling the stories and the stories behind stories about what's going on in Baltimore.